Welcome to High Desert Dialogue, your community affairs program. Welcome to High Desert Dialogue. It's like Y102, Cat Country. Welcome to 106.5 The Fox, Dog 9. Welcome to an HD 96.3. Now, here's your host for High Desert Dialogue, Roxanne Scafidi.
Hi, it's Roxanne Scafidi for High Desert Dialogue. We present to you a special Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders program.
I'm a dreamer, I'm a visionary, I'm a leader, I'm extraordinary. The light can get you down sometimes, it seems. I'll never let it take away my dreams.
Hi, this is Regina Weatherspoon Bell. Welcome to our special Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders program featuring some extraordinary people. Thank you for joining us. Today's guest is known worldwide as a true blues man, a self-taught musician, singer, and songwriter. He's also a committed father and grandfather. He's received many recognitions for his artistry, including being a Grammy nominee. It's my privilege to welcome one of our 2018 DVL Lifetime Achievement honorees and bluesman extraordinaire, Mr. Ray Brooks. So, born in Gonzales, Texas, right?
Yes, Gonzales, Texas.
So, from Gonzales, Texas, all around the world, you've traveled, right?
Yes.
And landed here in Victorville.
Yes.
Tell me about that. How'd that happen?
That's a long story. So do we have time?
Well, give me that condensed version.
Okay, the condensed version. I graduated high school in Gonzales, Texas, Edwards High School, 1957, May. And I went to Corpus Christi, Texas, which is just south of there, 150 miles. And one day I was sitting on the bus stop and I saw this Stella guitar in the pawn shop window for $10. And I said, well, when I get the money, I'll come back and get it. And I did. And so I started teaching myself how to play. And so the next year I was playing at the Cloud Nine downtown Corpus Christi, and which was, I mean, a gigantic step for the time, you know. And the owner of the club was a very liberal guy, so we used to stand out in front of the place and, you know, have conversations with the customers and stuff. So that was that was big. And from there, I went to Dallas and worked with groups out of there, you know, a booking agent we used to work with there. And I got to Los Angeles in 63.
Wow.
And played all the hot spots and the Valley, Hollywood, etc. And I made my first trip abroad in 1980. We went to South Africa, and I was the musical director for Cashiers. And we were the opening act for Tina Turner.
Wow.
On the South African tour for 3 months.
And moving forward, how did you land in Victorville?
I came home. I had a friend, Moses Armstrong, a relative of Louis Armstrong.
Wow. And
Moses was a drummer.
Uh-huh.
He has since passed on. And so he called me and he says, hey, man, I got a gig in Victorville. You want to go do it with me? And I hadn't even been to Victorville. I think early on in the 60s when I first came out here, we came up and played somewhere, a small spot somewhere. I remember we stayed in the cars and stuff at night and all that type of thing.
Wow.
So I hadn't been to Victorville since. And so I came up here in year 2000, played at the Green Tree.
Wow.
Yes, six nights a week.
Six nights a week.
And that's when things were booming here.
Okay.
Yes.
And so that's when you got bit and put down some roots here in Victorville.
Yes, I, you know, wound up meeting my wife here. And so I moved up here.
Great.
Yeah, and I've been here ever since.
And I know that you've been doing a lot of work in and around our schools and really trying to reach out to young people to kind of share that aspect. Can you just talk a little bit about where you are, what your philosophy is about really what I call hands-on?
Well, the thing for me, in our time and when we started, we couldn't afford lessons. So the jam session was the place where it was the school.
Mm-hmm.
It was the brotherhood. That is where we learned. You know, the older generation took you under their wing and they showed you the way. They were hard, you know.
Yeah.
And some of that's good.
Uh-huh.
And the last time I saw my father alive, I wanted to thank him for all of that. You know, and so my thing today is, it says history repeats itself
mm-hmm.
in a different form. And so, yes, I think the music is going to come back around again. And so our young musicians need to be educated to the technical side of the music
mm-hmm.
because now we have all this technology. And that's what happened in the early days. Time is money. So they said, well, let's get these musicians who can read and we'll cut down on the studio time.
Right.
And so now we also know that young people who study music also improve in their other subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a part of that. And so that's what, you know, I try to do at this stage. And young people, they want to know. And so I just say to parents and all, take notice, you know, on what your children is talking about
mm-hmm.
and what they want to do and what they want to be. And, you know, I know there's a line with that, you know, when it comes to the arts and all. But you can do more than one thing.
Yeah.
You see, I had a young kid 2 years ago, 9 years old. And in my class, I always have a session just like we're doing. And so I ask him, I says, what do you want to do with your music? So he says, I want to use my music to supplement my income.
Hmm.
9 year old, you know.
All right.
Yes. And so...
And that's Bruno Mars, right?
No.
You started this back in the early 60s, your musical career, right?
Yes.
And coming forward, is there one, and I know that's probably a real challenge, but is there one particular or profound lesson that you have learned about this business of music?
I think you can't get too high. You know what I mean? My dad used to say that about holidays and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not expecting too much, then you won't be disappointed if it doesn't happen. You know. And so, but, you know, you got to keep your eye on the prize, of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you got to be diligent and you got to find out what you need to do, you know, get information.
Mm-hmm.
How can I be successful at this?
Right.
You need
so
to
educate yourself.
Educate yourself and all. But even with all of that, sometimes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The grace of God.
Moses got right there to the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mr. Brooks, I want to say thank you.
Thank you so much.
Not just for this interview, but I want to thank you for what you've done, what your musical contributions have been to our society. I want to thank you for the man that you have been and being an example of what manhood looks like, not just from the professional level, but on a personal level. I want to thank you for landing here in Victorville and being able to share with us and a whole new generation and expose a new generation to that wonderful world of music through whether it's blues, gospel, jazz, whatever that is, R&B.
Yes.
For being able to help them to understand, right?
Yes.
And also, maybe it gets a little bit into their souls to carry forward.
No doubt. It's already there.
And also being just an extraordinary keeper of our history. So I want to say thank you for that. I also want to acknowledge that you are 2018 Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders Lifetime Achievement Honoree, and we couldn't be prouder to be able to share that recognition with the High Desert community. So thank you for all that you've done. Thank you for all that you'll continue to do.
Thank you so very much, and all your staff.
This program has been made possible by the generous support of Shear Realty, exceeding expectations for over 37 years. Visit us online at dvlproject.com and follow us on Facebook. My special guest today exemplifies the best of overcoming adversity and using it to fuel a movement, a way of life that challenges, encourages, inspires, and motivates our young people to be the best they can. He is a man for whom I have great admiration and respect. I love his spirit, his sense of humor, and his ability to have the tough discussions to advocate for those who most often are treated as disposable or insignificant. I'm honored to have in studio the founder, president, and CEO of Young Visionaries Youth Leadership Academy and CEO of Stone Consultants and one of our 2018 DVL Icon honorees, Mr. Terrence Stone. So this morning, I am really excited to have this gentleman here in studio with me. He's somebody that I've known for quite some time now, who I admire and have a great deal of respect for. So I want to just jump right in. For 2018 DVL, we have two icon honorees. And one of those icon honorees is here with me today, Mr. Terrence Stone.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm great.
Good, it's good to be here.
And I'm so happy to have you here. And I'm really happy to have you here in this forum to be able to share your story.
Oh, yes.
To be able to share some words of inspiration.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, ma'am.
And maybe a couple of laughs or two.
Last one I'm good at.
So, Terrence, let's just jump right in. Tell us a little bit about your background, because what you've done is you've created an organization, Young mm-hmm. Visionaries.
Yes, ma'am.
That's really committed and dedicated to our youth and a lot of the youth that are considered disenfranchised or at risk or, you know, just all of those titles that really indicate negativity. Mm-hmm. But you have created an organization that doesn't label them in that way.
No, not at all.
Doesn't see them in that way, despite whatever their circumstances may be and where they've come from. And there's a real reason behind that. So can you share with our listenership what that reason is, how you got to that point?
Sure, and also just thank you for having me on. I'm excited.
It's my joy.
Yeah. But my name is Terrence Stone. I'm founder and CEO of Young Visionaries Youth Leadership Academy. And basically, we started off as just a gang intervention program. And so we just came into the community in around 2001 mm-hmm. and just started working with kids on basically just gang intervention. And I tell people we just had a gang intervention program because that's all I knew was just gangs, basically. Mm-hmm. Myself, I was an ex-gang member, second generation. Grew up in a gang community, mm-hmm. Uncles, brothers, stepfather, everyone mm-hmm. was just involved in some type of gang type of activity. And this is even before they had Crips and Bloods and things like that, too. So and just with that and being in and around this environment all of my life, it makes you think that you have to be in that environment. So coming out of that environment, I had to put together some type of structure and a system to let kids know that they don't have to be in that environment. So so we developed Young Visionaries in 2001. Mm-hmm. And So since then, we've worked with about 35,000 kids throughout the United States.
Wait, let's go back.
Let's go back.
Because I don't want to miss that.
Okay.
So since 2001.
Yes, ma'am.
You have worked with 35,000.
Over 35,000 kids. That was our probably year ago or 2 year ago count. So we have to recount now, you know, but it's up to about around 35,000 kids.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so that's just what we do. We just go in and work with them. Now we have, we do more than just gang intervention.
Mm-hmm.
We do, workforce development and youth employment development. We have mentoring programs, mental health programs, and things like that. We work with runaway homeless kids. So mm-hmm. we have outreach programs to go find those kids and get those kids back on track. We give out scholarships to kids and things like that. So we just, over the years, just learned how to put together programs that attracts kids also. You
okay.
know, so
you also so have a mentoring program, right?
Our mentoring program, yes. And just the other day, we went to Dominique Easley from the Rams. Mm-hmm. He came out and we had to drive to him. We took the kids to Burbank and he brought 10 kids from the Inland Empire uh-huh. out to Burbank and he took those kids shopping, you know, and, you know, just a thank you.
And that's part of what was being modeled for them because here's somebody who clearly is. Affluent, right?
A little bit.
Yeah, and so he's sharing and giving back.
Yeah.
And so that's how it happens, right?
Yeah,
Because that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Now, you also referenced a little earlier that you're not necessarily there as much in office as you used to be, but there's a reason why you're not there as much, because I see that you are doing a lot more speaking engagements, it seems to me. You are just, and if you're not doing speaking engagements, it seems like you're somewhere accepting an award.
Yeah.
Right?
Or in somebody else's
office. So can you talk to us a little bit about the speaking engagements and what your particular theme is?
Well, myself, I'm also a state and national certified gang intervention prevention specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So I travel across the United States and I train on gangs. So I train law enforcement, teachers, social workers, youth intervention workers and things like that on gangs. And when I train, because you can find basic information on gangs, everyone knows that Blues or Crips and Bloods or Reds and, you know, then you have Serranos and Nathaniels and things like that. But from my background, it is unique because I can tell you, well, this is how they think. Because the color or the gang, that's just a relationship that they have. So the thing now is like, okay, how can you break that relationship? Because really it's an abusive relationship, but they don't know that they're in an abusive relationship sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of break that down and then connect them with something that was something better than what they had, basically. Mm-hmm. So I travel and I speak on that. But I also do youth motivational speaking for kids. So I hit a lot of schools and youth programs and just to motivate kids. I have a presentation called Kids That Camp and Kids That Climb, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, talk about, you know, how kids camp and it's easy to camp. So, you know, when we camp in large groups and then we, you know, and because we're just hanging out and we're chilling, I make it real fun and interactive. And I talk about kids that climb. When we climb in small groups,
mm-hmm.
you know, mountain climbing type of stuff, you know. And I usually say, who's been mountain climbing? The kids are lying, raising their hand. Like, you ain't been mountain climbing. But they don't know yet. They thinking, you know, because they walked up the mountain or hill that is mountain climbing. And I was like, no, let me tell you what happened. Because they have these ropes and they hooked up together and they have these different clothes and just explain to them just the preparation it takes,
right.
you know, to succeed, basically. And you know, and they get it. And I try to make it really fun and interactive and things like that. So
after doing this work for what, let's just say 17 years, 18 years, right? What motivates you to continue to get up day after day and still be dedicated to doing this work?
You know what? I love what I do. Like, I done had all kinds of jobs, you know, before this. I remember, I am serious. Like, and I done drove buses. People don't know, I drove city buses for like 3 years. I worked at a hotel, and I was supposed to be the worked at the front desk, but they had me washing toilets and cleaning rooms. They just abused their little power with me. You know, I worked in warehouses and things like that. So just looking back over the years, there's nothing else that I'd rather be doing than this. So that's just motivation, you know, within itself. Plus, I'm the boss. And so in doing this right here, I cannot think of anything that I would rather be doing besides vacation, basically, you know. So also, and being the founder of your organization, though, also, so it's like, you know, well, I can't compare with having birth because I never gave birth.
Right.
But I birthed this organization, you know,
right.
and I watched
gave
it grow.
Life.
And I remember, you know, before all the hoopla and, you know, the wards and things like that, where I just had just a backpack. You know, I remember not having a car. I remember being homeless, just trying to still hold on to Young Visionaries because I knew I was like, OK, I'll just hold on to this. And, you know, and God, you just work everything out. But I'm going to hold on to this, basically. And so over the years, I've been able to raise my kids and work with thousands of other people's kids just based off just holding on to almost just all that I had, basically. Awesome just seeing that, just the impact that you'll have, because you don't know. You just do what you do, and hopefully that, you know, it's just like throwing spaghetti at the wall sometime, you know, hopefully something sticks. But when you find those ones that stick, it just makes you so, you know, proud to see, you know, those young people and that they're not being tricked by the streets and gangs and things like that. And they're going on and they're having families and taking care of their families and being on those households. I think that's one of the best things that you can ever see, is just the life or the information that you put into someone else is grow and blossom. And that person goes on to be a great human being.
I want to get this before we wrap up. You've talked a lot about all the things that you've done to help others. But there was a time when you had to do something for yourself, because you spoke about growing up in a culture that was generation upon generation.
Yes.
Rooted in the gang mentality.
Yes.
But there had to be a time when you, as your own individual, realized and made a choice.
Yeah.
That this was no longer for you. If you can you kind of articulate that for our listeners, when that happened and what was the thought or that pivotal moment?
Well, with me, 1998, basically, I was facing two life sentences plus 25 years of life for gang-related shooting that I didn't do, but I was standing right there. And so just facing that amount of time, and I've did interviews before, and I tell people it wasn't the time, because that environment that we grew up in, it just breeds you to do time. So kids that I grew up with and be around, like, we wasn't scared of time. You know, we did time before, but it was a fact, I felt like, that they didn't care, meaning the homies, the people that's supposed to love me and, you know, have my back, didn't care that I was facing life. And then at that time also, my daughter was 9 months. I remember them bringing her up to the visiting thing, and I'm sitting there facing life for some other stuff, and she's just banging on that glass, "Daddy, Daddy," you know. And so in that, I had to make a decision, you know, will I keep living this lifestyle or take care of my daughter, right? Cool. So I made that choice. So now she's 20 now, right? And so I think it was the best decision I made, because she's 20 and she just had a baby. So now I get to see her baby, you know, and she don't have to bang on glass or anything, you
That's
know.
Right.
So I just, you know, just loved the heck out of my little granddaughter and, you know, and things like that. And then I just think back when I see her, because she looked just like her when she was a baby too.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, man, you know, I like, you know, kids have to understand that these decisions will just wreck your whole life. You know, and you don't know, because, you know, we make dumb decisions as young people, but we don't want to make the decisions that you can never come back from. But that, I think that just 1998. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are glad that you chose differently. We are so blessed by the work that you continue to do in our community. I want to say thank you. On behalf of the Dreamers, Visionaries, and Leaders Project,
thank you
for coming in and sharing your story, sharing your words of wisdom, just being transparent about who you are. I want to thank you, most importantly, for being a part of our community and bringing the best of who you are, what you've learned, and who you know to our community. We are definitely made better because of having you here. So thank you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you so much.
This program has been made possible by the generous support of Shear Realty, exceeding expectations for over 37 years. Visit us online at dvlproject.com and follow us on Facebook. Sure to join us next week at 6 a.m. on this station for a most insightful and informative interview with Melanie Ajawanchuku from A Dietitian's Exchange. You won't want to miss this one. Remember, be kind to yourself and others, and be the change you want to see.
I'm a dreamer. I'm a visionary. I'm a leader. I'm extraordinary. The light can get you down sometimes. It seems I'll never let it take away my dream.
Been listening to High Desert Dialogue, a public service program of El Dorado Broadcasters. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for High Desert Dialogue, email us at vvpsa@edbroadcasters.com. El Dorado Broadcasters is an equal opportunity employer serving the greater High Desert area on great stations like Y102, Cat Country 100.7, 106.5 The Fox, Talk 960, and HD 96.3. Join us again next weekend at the same time for High Desert Dialogue.